I want to invite you to take just one moment to share one good thing and one not so good thing that happened to you this week with your neighbor. Just take a moment right now. One good thing, one not so good thing right now. My week was pretty good.
I forget that you don't have spring break. It's so weird.
Like, how was it for you?
Adult, and yeah. Like, I just worked. I was like, you didn't have spring break though.
Yeah.
No.
I have never been there.
I hadn't either. And so he's been there like 5 or 6 times. So he's
I want to go. It's on my list.
Beautiful.
I need to go.
You want somebody to show you around.
Okay. Seriously, I need to go. Really do.
We almost died, but it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I forget.
Don't take it anywhere with you if you want, like, a nice, safe way to travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll take you in the back road. You'll be like, where the heck are you?
It's part of the adventure, right? Part of the adventure. Hopefully you all had a chance to share just a little bit there about your week. I was just reminded. One of our college students just reminded me just now that she said, "I forget that adults don't have spring break." Yeah. What'd you do with your spring break? That's not true, Sarah. That's not true. We have teachers, and they are mostly adults, most of them, and they do get a spring break. I want to thank you for being here in worship today. And I mentioned last week in last week's message, those of you who are here, that my father was going to have knee surgery last week, and several of you have asked me about him and prayed for him, and he's doing really well. I want to thank you. That is where I was. What I did this past week was be there and help out with a few things while he was having that done. And I know many of you probably shared some things, maybe similar to that. You traveled. You had some things that you planned to do. Some of those you actually got done. Others of those, maybe it didn't quite work out the way that you wanted it to. As we're making this journey together this month, focusing on the cross and talking about these crossroads, we each are on this journey together. I just want to encourage you as you think through your week, this past week, and whatever may be in front of you in this week as we go forward, that our identity is not wrapped up in those circumstances. I know those are part of our experience. But as we're looking to Jesus and as we're looking to Christ crucified, we are reminded of our true identity bound in God's grace and love poured out for us. So I want to call you back to that. Wherever and whatever you experienced this past week, not to lose yourself in those false identities, but we come and gather here today to renew and refocus ourselves on our true identity. One other thing that I was able to do this week, because I went back home to see to be with my dad, and then I had some time to be able to go and visit the grave. I don't know if you ever do that very much. Those of you who have lost loved ones probably have, and that's actually been a death has been a regular part of our life, and so if that's your experience as well, sometimes you go back home and you take time to go and visit a cemetery and visit those grave sites, and you kind of have some different memories that come back, and you think about different people and different loved ones. Most of you know our story, those of you who've been a part of the Hillcrest family since we've been here the last year and a half, know that Heather and my story really is a story that emerges of God bringing life out of tragedy and out of death. And you've heard me share some of the story of Heather's first husband, James, who died from cancer, who was my best friend. And I wanted to take some time this morning to share a little bit of James's crossroad, because I think that you'll identify with it. You see, James wasn't raised a Christian. He was like so many people. He wasn't against God, but he did his thing, and he was happy to let God do his thing, and those were two different paths. James had a job, he was married, he had children, and that was more than enough to be able to fill up his time. But like all of us, even though that was able to kind of satisfy a part of his life, he found himself chasing things and on a road that really not only did he find fulfillment there, but he began to find that the decisions and the choices that he was making were harmful. I remember not long after James had been a Christian, we had known each other probably for about a year, and we had gotten very close in that time, and we were doing what friends do. We were going to see, I think we were going to see the movie Godzilla together, okay? You know, good male bonding time. And we were riding in the car together, and as we were just talking, two brothers in Christ who loved each other and we're on a journey on our crossroad. And he began to open up to me about how he found himself before he surrendered his life to Christ at this point of decision. You know, Heather was like so many women in the church back then. She was married, but she was the solo faith bearer in her house. I'm so thankful for the godly women of the church, because that's not easy. And for all the early years of their marriage, Heather would invite James to church on Sunday, and he would graciously decline. I'm glad that you do that. I'm glad that you take the kids. It's just not for me. And maybe some of you are here today and you finally accepted that invitation. I'm glad that you're here today. If you are just starting, I hope you realize this is not a group of people or any of us that have everything all figured out. And James began to learn that himself. But what had really stood out to him was the change or the differences that he saw in his wife and in the lives of some other Christians that he encountered, was how they didn't live so much for themselves, but they really were devoted to living to serve and to give their lives to others. And we really don't talk about this a lot, but we are not honest as a people how devastating selfishness and ego is, because it starts to feed and a hunger and starts pulling us in ways that are harmful and destructive to ourselves and to people around us. And that was the alarms that James had started to see in his own life. He had started to see how decisions of how he was using his time and how much time he was spending away from his family, and then what he was doing whenever he was away was so wrapped into himself that it was literally starting to cause problems in his marriage, and it made him worry about his relationship with his children, because he saw that his life and his path and the road that he was on was one so wrapped into himself that he was neglecting even those that he loved and that he cared about. And things started to happen in James's life, and I will never forget whenever we were riding together that day and he said these words to me. This was his crossroads statement. He said, "I knew I had to die to who I was." I'm so thankful that God broke through to him, that he was able to have that clarity to realize that living for yourself, living to please yourself, living to chase your own desires, putting yourself first is not a life well lived. It's a life that hurts. It doesn't remove our wounds. It creates new wounds. It doesn't dig us out of the holes that we find our lives in. Instead, we find ourselves going even deeper into the mess and hurt and brokenness of our human condition and of our sinful self. And it was that breakthrough of God coming into his life to open him up to realize there was nothing that he could do as he was to change or save or restore his life. It had to be James dying to who he was. It still gives me chills today to think back to that moment and listen to him telling me and confessing to me his cross story. To be able to confess his sins and then to be able to confess when he learned that God was willing to take him as he was and that he could die with Jesus and be made to new life. The family was so shocked the day that James was baptized that my mother-in-law thought it was a joke when she got the phone call. "James is going to be baptized," Heather called and told her. "Nuh-uh." You see, God has a way of breaking through. And I know sometimes if you've been living out the story for a long time and if you've always been in church, we can almost become numb to the cross. We can almost become numb to the transforming power of Jesus dying for us and also calling us to come and die with Him. But it's only when we go back there again, it's only when we look with refreshed eyes, it's only whenever we take that bread of Jesus and that cup of Jesus with an open heart that we're able to see with fresh eyes and fresh faith that what God is still doing in us is transforming us from who we were into who God has called us to be. Our true identity is revealed through Christ on the cross. James was never the same after that. He was like a firebolt for God. And even whenever he became sick, and even whenever he lost his battle to cancer, he had already won because he had found himself in Jesus Christ. Christians, you know, we often forget our identities as well. I love this text here from Luke chapter 9. And we're going to start reading in verse 18 because it pulls out this very real truth when we talk about the cross and what it's about. Because the question that we're dealing with when we talk about our crossroad is not just choices, but it's more than that. It's deeper than that. It really is understanding who God is and who we are. And so this conversation emerges with Jesus and His disciples, and we spent time looking at Jesus' silence going to the cross last week, and you'll notice the lead-in to this discussion is that Jesus is praying. And from out of this time of silence and solitude with God and with His disciples emerges a most significant question. One that we all have to come to this place. Who is Jesus? He asked them, who do they say that I am? Who do people say that I am? And you can see the different responses and the different answers, and people still have a lot of different answers about who Jesus is today. And so they share those different ideas, the reputation. And then Jesus comes back more pointedly and more personally and asks His disciples, who do you say that I am? And Peter speaks up and says, you're God's Messiah. Now, I don't know how long all of you have been Christians. Many of you are seasoned saints. Some of you may be on, you know, just starting the journey, or some of you may be here today just trying to figure out exactly what this story is about Jesus and what it has to do with your life. The truth is, none of us can know who we are until we first know who Jesus is, who God is. And so before Jesus will go on to invite all those who would come to follow Him, those who would want to be His disciples, that first question is a question of identity. And part of what Jesus is doing is we have to remove some of these false identities that we have about God, that we have about Jesus. What does Messiah mean? And we also have to remove some of the false identities that we have wrapped into that about ourselves. And Peter speaks up, and what he says is correct, but at the same time, it's kind of a half correctness or a half truth, because it's the words are right, but his understanding, like most everyone else's understanding of God's Messiah, came from a very human perspective. God's Messiah in Peter's eyes and the rest of the disciples' eyes was of a warrior hero who would come and use his might and use his aggression to destroy and overthrow their enemies. But that's not God's Messiah. And so whenever Jesus responds to Peter's confession here, we don't have him saying, like in a few of the other gospel accounts, we don't have him saying, good answer, like he does in Matthew. Instead, he says, don't tell anyone this. And he goes on and talks about the Son of Man and His suffering. Jesus' answer to who He is wrapped in this idea of the suffering servant, the very one that we've been reading about from Isaiah 53 that was prophesied years ago, generations before Jesus walked the earth. And that's where Jesus goes, and that's where He leans in to answer the question about who God's Messiah is. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. And He must be killed and on the third day raised to life. You see, God's Messiah does not come to kill and destroy their enemies. God's Messiah is the one who comes to give His life and to die for His enemies. This is radically different than what they expected. I would say that this is still a radically different Jesus than many of us look for at times. We want a Jesus who will solve our problems. We want a Jesus who will take the mess that I have in my life, maybe some of the challenges that you even went through this past week, or the things that you're not looking forward to that are ahead of you. I know the SIAs, teachers, students, guess what? Tomorrow's Monday and you're going back into the grind, and we don't have any spring breaks again for a while. There may be some things that you're dreading. Some of you are dealing with illnesses. Some of you are dealing with financial struggles. Some of you are dealing with relationships and people in your life that you want to avoid, and you wish that God would just remove all of those struggles. And sometimes even churches teach that that's the kind of Jesus that God has given us. But that's not who Jesus describes Himself as. He's not a magic solution to the pains and struggles in your life. In fact, full disclosure here, Jesus came to suffer and to die, and He's left us as this pattern to follow. The road to the cross is not a pain-free journey. And far too often, the poor decisions that we make, the decisions that we make that are about taking care of ourselves or putting ourselves first, are almost always from this very small ego-focused place where preserving myself from pain and keeping myself safe and keeping myself from problems becomes such a priority. And this terrible reverse happens. We don't actually eliminate problems in our lives by making decisions this way. We create more, and we do damage to those around us as well. We hurt. We harm. We neglect. Jesus' calling and invitation about who He is and who His disciples will be is centered on embracing the struggle and the death to self. True change, deep change, can only come when we die to ourselves. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. To deny self is to die to self. That's why whenever James, Jesus was speaking through James, I'll say, whenever James retold his cross story, his crossroad, that's why he identified with that aspect of it. I knew that I had to die. Why? Because it's the only way that I can change. There is no other way to be transformed but to die to ourselves so that Jesus can come alive in us. I love the way that John, in his ministry, as Jesus' ministry was starting to grow in John chapter 3 and verse 30, John embraces this so heartily, this idea of dying to self, this idea of letting yourself pass away so that Christ can come to life. He says this, and this is a great verse to kind of have in your spiritual tank to go to whenever you feel your self-centered self start to creep in. And he says simply, he must become greater, I must become less. Some of his disciples, some of John's disciples were concerned that Jesus was dominating their ministry. This is our job. We're the ones who do the baptizing. Your name is John the Baptist, right? And here is Jesus and his disciples, and people are coming out to him and they're being baptized. That's our thing. John doesn't see Jesus as a threat. Instead, John embraces the fact that he's here so that I can lay my life aside, so that he can become great. Jesus in his own ministry described it this way in John chapter 12 and verse 24, using the illustration of wheat. He says, "Very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." Jesus understood this in his own ministry. Jesus knew that he himself had come and hit the only way that he could bring life, the only way that he can multiply salvation and restoration and healing and redemption for a broken humanity, was to take on our suffering, was to take on our sin, and to die for us. This is the calling that you and I have been given from the cross. Your identity is not in a Jesus who will simply snap his fingers and take your problems away. Your identity is not in a Jesus who will just snap his fingers and the temptation that you had in your life just melts away. Instead, you have a Jesus who comes right up into the mess of your life and takes it with you and says, "I know what you're struggling with. I know where you've been. I know the hurts that you've created in your own life and in others' lives. And I'm going to fix. I'm going to join with you and take it into myself. And we're going to die together so that the life of God will be born and you'll be transformed." The Apostle Paul said it this way in Galatians 2 in verse 20, "I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." You can hear in this statement, Paul understands very clearly his identity. He is not Saul of Tarsus or Paul of Tarsus. It's not about his education or his background or any of those things or his accomplishments. He doesn't find himself tied into who he is by what he's capable of or what he's done, or he doesn't find himself tied to the shame of his mistakes and his guilt. He sees his identity in God, in Christ, who gave his life for him because of his overflowing, unconditional love. And he says, "And that's where I find who I am. It's in the cross. And Jesus is alive in me the more I embrace this truth." James was much more honest than a lot of Christians are when he opened up to me about the struggles in his life. It was refreshing because it was real and it was true. Church, we have got to get past the lie and the false identity that has become a dominant theme that many people see about Christians. They're the people with no problems. They're the people who have no... they don't struggle like the rest of us. They have their act together. That's not true. Jesus makes a statement here in Luke that isn't mentioned in the other Gospels. And in 9:23, he says, "To deny yourself, take up your cross." Do you know what word he adds there? Daily. Do you know why Jesus includes that? Because guess what? You're not going to do this perfectly. Sometimes, and more often than not, the journey to the cross, the journey on your crossroad, is often two steps forward. You let go of this, you let go of that attachment, you don't identify with that, but then you hold on to this other thing and you take a step back. And Jesus calls us back again. He doesn't abandon you at that moment and say, well, my love was conditioned on whether or not you did the denial right and you took your cross right and all those things. That's not how Jesus works. Instead, He says, in love and in His grace, again. Start again. Start over now. Start over today. You lost yourself in that moment, in that thought, in that sin. Return again. Daily. Take up your cross daily. Deny yourself daily. Follow me daily. So maybe the thing that happened to you this past week was something that pulled you away from the Lord. And maybe what you feel looming over your life today is more guilt and shame to the point of a disconnect. As if the crossroad is one without failure. We look to Jesus and we see not a calling of perfection, but a process of growth and transformation. The cross reveals basic truths that we need to all identify with. God's love, when you look to the cross, we see that God's love revealed more clearly than any other event, more clearly than when we look at the beauty of creation, more clearly when we look at all the good that God has done in our world. The cross reveals, above all things, God's love as unconditional. There's nothing you can do to earn it. Jesus went and won it. We must embrace that truth, God's unconditional love. And the second is tied to it. There's nothing that you can do by yourself to fix yourself. Instead, what Jesus calls you to do is follow Him. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. And follow Him. That's the people that we're called to be. That's where our identity is found. That's what Paul said when he said, I have been crucified with Christ. I am no longer alive. It's Jesus. If you see life, if you see goodness that's happening in me, you need to recognize it for who it is. It is Christ alive in me. And that's the church. That's who we are. I knew I had to die, my friend James said so many years ago. And in dying, Christ was born in His life. Some of you may be at the same crossroads in your life today. You've worked so hard to find your security and your identity in the things that you do and your accomplishments. Or some of you are finding your identity in the shame that you have over struggles and temptations and sins that are shackled. Prisons of your life. Know that God's love and His offering is made clear through Christ crucified. And that His calling to you is to come and share in that life. You can only get there through death. So you lay down your life. There may be some that are here, even in a church where so many of us have been Christians for a long time, the calling, more often than not, is not for you to become a Christian. The calling to us is to live daily as Christians. That's Jesus' statement here. And it may be that you need that encouragement in your life today, this, to take up your cross again, to hold to Jesus even more tightly today than you did yesterday. Some of you may be like my friend James, who so many years ago recognized that where he was living and the path and the road that he was on and the choices that he was making was destroying his life and the people that he loved. And he needed Jesus to break through. It may be that you need to make that confession. Who is Jesus? He's God's Messiah, the suffering servant. Gave his life for my sins, and there's nothing I can do to change how he feels about me. But will you receive him? Turn from the path that you're on. Come to Jesus. Confess his name. Receive him. Have your sins washed away in baptism. Meet him at the cross there. And start this journey following Jesus. Whatever your crossroad may be today, we're going to have shepherds here up front and in the back this morning to receive you. If you have prayer needs, if you need to come before the church, let's stand together and let's sing.